Mini episode 270 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by that NBA lottery pick, your pop culture influenced look at the world of hoops. Follow them on the web at that NBALotteryPick.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 270. Rick Morris and Steve Callis coming at you here. We are breaking down, we're doing a new segment on the show. We've been doing the last couple of summers on our blog at the FDH Lounge multimedia magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com, ranking the top 30 players in MLB, NBA, and NHL, top 32 in the NFL. Reason being, an average of one per team, just to try to look at some of the elite players in the sport. This year, I decided to try to make show segments out of it. Let's get these analyzed. Let's get them picked over by folks who really love the different sports. Rob Cullen, I believe, is going to be on deck to analyze my NHL ones, as he's done for our NHL draft guides the last couple of years. So essentially, it'll just be a matter of getting Russ's thoughts on the air. That's where it kind of started, because Russ has been doing most of my NHL list in the last couple of years. So in the interest of doing one for a show segment, having the good friends Dallas here and available to do this, I busted out the list here. We have it up on the blog, and just an explanation. Baseball is arguably the toughest one to do, because if we're doing it in the middle of summer, it's the only one that's mid-season. The NBA and the NHL at this time of year, the playoffs, basically know what you think of these guys. The only great theory on this thing is, assume the 162-game season is starting today. Who would you take? Who do you like in the near term in baseball? How would you slot these guys? And borrowing from how we do it for fantasy sports, where we always break guys into tiers here, where we think there's a little bit of a drop-off, I incorporate that into our list as well here. Going to run through first the guys who went off of the list from last year, who are not on the top 30 and where they placed. They placed off the list this year, but here's where they were a year ago. Troy Tulowitzki, 15. Chris Sale, 16. R.A. Dickey, 19. Adrian Beltre, 20. Carlos Beltran, 21. Gio Gonzalez, 24. Jose Bautista, 25. Paul Konerko, 26. Roy Halladay, 28. Adrian Gonzalez, 29. And again, it's a thing where you don't want to, it's hard with baseball. You don't want to overreact to the short term. You don't want to overreact to what we've seen thus far this year. And a guy like Adrian Beltre going from 20 to off the list altogether here, it just shows you how fine that line is. I would certainly have Adrian Beltre on an honorable mention list at this point in time. Same with Chris Sale. Same potentially with Gio Gonzalez, although he's off to a tough start this year. Some guys like Bautista, Konerko, Halladay, we probably have seen their best days already. I guess the jury would be out on R.A. Dickey. But, Steve, of the guys that are off the list, do you have any thoughts on them?
Yeah, I just have one comment on a guy who is off the list, who should be on the list, I believe, in
okay.
The second tier, and that would be Troy Tulowitzki. He was bad early in the year, but he's now come back batting 319, OBP 400, OPS 997. That's pretty impressive, Rick. That gets,
yeah,
in my opinion, gets him back on the second tier. 8 home runs, 32 RBIs, a couple of game-winning hits just in the last week. So I think he's rebounded a little from that early season slump. All the guys you mentioned, I would agree with them in terms of them being off the list, although the guys you mentioned who could be very close, like a Beltre who's having a good year. But I think of all of those guys, the one guy who should be back on the list in the 14 to 30 tier would be Tulo, because he is now having a really good year.
And this is hilarious to me that this is your initial point of some disagreement here, because I have always been a big Tulo mark.
I
have always been on this guy probably more than most people. Which is interesting. For me, I guess it came down to wariness of injuries and how he's kind of held up the last couple of years. I truly hope that we get to see at least a 550 at-bat season from the guy this year. And certainly, if we get to see something like that, you bet he'll be back on the list next year. Working our way down here, the second tier. Basically, we only had a first tier and a second tier, which kind of tends to be the case with baseball because it is kind of a gradual kind of a fall off, it seems like, on each tier. And, you know, you could even question where you would draw such a line here. But my line started at 14. So working our way from 30 to 14 here at 30. You're going to see this with two of the first three guys, Los Angeles Angels, who that's what makes this so tough because you look at what they've done thus far, and it's been putrid this season, but how much of that do you expect to kind of wear off as time goes on? That's what makes this such a delicate balance. Josh Hamilton's number 30 on the list. He was number one at this time a year ago. Remember how he started the season and how he had been previous to that. Josh Hamilton, only on the list at all, as putrid as he's been, based on an expectation that, yes, he will bounce back. Adam Wainwright, 29, not on the list last year. Albert Pujols, 28, down from 14. Matt Kemp, kind of similar out there in SoCal, 27, down from 2. Yu Darvish cracks the list for the first time at 26. He was not on it last year. Cole Hamels at 25. He was 22 last year. One of the steadiest probably players on the list from year to year that we're seeing. Matt Cain at 24, down from 9. Off to kind of a brutal start this season, but just the fact that he's still on the list, clearly you know that I expect him to bounce back. Evan Longoria, 23. He must have been a tough cut not to have made it last year. I think he was also hurt part of the time, but he was not on the list last year. He's on at 23. Jared Weaver, hurt right now, but on it at 22. We should be seeing him shortly here. I think he was number 7 a year ago. Johnny Cueto, another fairly steady guy, 21. He was 17 last year, as well as Cliff Lee at 20. You could say the same for him, up from 23. Matt Harvey cracks the list. This is a name I'm sure we'll be discussing. He was obviously not on it a year ago. David Price at 18, not on the list a year ago. Again, he must have just been somebody who was right at the tail end, must have just been honorable mention. Buster Posey, 17, not on the list last year. Steven Strasburg, 16. He was 12th a year ago. Justin Upton, 15th. Last year would have been probably the only year in the last couple of years you wouldn't have seen him on the list because he had a brutal year by his standards. And at number 14, Carlos Gonzalez, down from 8th a year ago. So, again, there's so much room for debate and how you look at these guys and what you expect from them at this point here. Steve, of the guys on the second tier, what are the ones that catch your attention the most?
Well, the ones who catch my attention the most, who I think should be in the first tier based on their performance this year, and I'll go right to Matt Harvey. Again, this guy has a whip 0.72 or something. His ERA is 1.5. He's only 5-0. He could easily be 6-0 with the perfect game almost, or 7-0. Again, even in the game where he retired 27 out of 28 guys and the only hit was a ground ball to short, and it was a clean hit, a clean infield hit, he didn't even get a decision in that game. So I think Harvey, in my mind, and I think you're going to be hearing about him forever, barring injury, he's jumping to the top of the list. He's playing for a bad team. You know, Tom Seaver, people have compared him to Seaver. I think he looks a little more like Clemens, which they talked about in that Sports Illustrated article. I also see a little Justin Verlander in him when he throws that hook as well. I think he's going to be really good for a really long time. But when Seaver, and I understand they're both Mets, but Seaver's first year, he was 16-13. That was easily a 20-game season for any decent team.
Yeah.
I mean, he was unbelievable when young. This guy's doing the same thing, and he's going into the seventh, eighth inning. He's throwing 9 innings of one-hit ball. That is something that Strasburg has not done. So I jump Harvey up to the top. Mm-hmm. Another guy, again, based on performance this year, you got to put Yu Darvish up there, 7-1 with a 0.923 whip, 86 strikeouts in 60 innings. Based on performance this year, to me, he has to be a number one top-tier guy as well. Those are the two, to me, of the entire second-tier list. Upton having a great year, maybe he could squeeze into the top tier. Gonzalez having an excellent year as well. But the two guys that jump out to me, Matt Harvey and Yu Darvish. Conversely, the other way, there's a bunch of guys who you could drop out. Again, though, it's a short, you know, when you're talking about pitchers, you know, David Price has to come off because he's on the DL. He's 1-4 with a 5.24 ERA. So when is he going to be any good now that he's on the DL? Josh Hamilton, I would drop him out. 215, 620 OPS combined. I mean, that's terrible. 46 strikeouts and 160 at-bats. Matt Kemp now, injury, absolutely. But one home run, 280, 39 strikeouts, 39 games. Those guys, to me, are candidates to go down. You know, what do you do with Jared Weaver? He's 0-1. He's on the DL. He's only started twice. You know, what do you do with those kinds of guys? It's what you said. They still have plenty of time to come back. Strasburg, much as I like him, I saw Manny Acta yesterday rating his top five pitchers under 25, and he actually rated Strasburg over Matt Harvey. You can't do it based on this year, that's for sure. Strasburg 2-5 with a 2.83 ERA. Can't get into the eighth inning.
Yeah.
Harvey's doing it routinely. So he ranked Strasburg 2, Harvey 3. He ranked Kershaw first. I think we mentioned that Kershaw's 25. If you're going to look at guys 25 and under, Kershaw with the lowest ERA in the history of baseball through the first 1,000 innings in the live ball era that dates back to 1920, beating, you know, Whitey Ford and Sandy Koufax.
Mm-hmm.
So we understand what Kershaw is. But I think a number of guys are dropping down as much because of injuries as non-performance. But, you know, though, I would take Hamilton out. I mean, he's got a long way to go to be good, never mind great.
Okay.
And I think your second tier is, at a minimum, top all-stars.
Okay. Couple follow-ups here on Harvey. And this is very interesting because, again, I would be the last person to ever paint myself as any kind of a Harvey skeptic. One of the things I did, do you put any sense into this? And again, there's always a thing of, like, when somebody's riding this high, inevitably they're going to come back to earth to a certain extent. But the notion of goes around the league this year a second time, a third time. Do you place any kind of credence whatsoever in that and in any kind of leveling effect as we go through the season?
I put a little credence in that. The reason I don't put a lot of credence is here's a guy who throws 97-98 in the first inning, 97-98 in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings.
Yeah.
He also has, and if you listen to any scouting report on him, he is the rare young pitcher who throws four pitches and has command of four pitches. Nobody, including Steven Strasburg, has come up to the major leagues recently mm-hmm. like that. He had, again, if you read Sports Illustrated, great cover article by Tom Verducci, all the trials and tribulations he had in college and in the minor leagues, and they quote his father as saying, it took him to be in the major leagues where he always knew he would be to really cut loose and be as good as he's become. Do you expect him to pitch like this? He's playing for a terrible team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Mets have 11 wins, and I think Harvey has 5, and I think they won 2 other games. Harvey got a no decision, including the perfect game that wasn't. So of their 11 wins, they've got 7 in Matt Harvey. So what are they without him? They're horrifically bad.
Yeah.
So I hearken back to Seaver, who was only 16-13. But if you were around at the time, and I was, that was a 20-game win season in our minds, and I was a Yankee guy. I wasn't even a Met fan back then. But when you look at what Harvey's doing, is he going to be incredibly unbelievable and go 20-3 for the New York Mets? No. Are the hitters going to catch up to him a little? I think yes. But just to give you one final example, last week he pitched a game in New York where he gave up 2 runs, and all everybody said was how he didn't have his good stuff. He really wasn't that good. What's the matter? And the guy gave up 2 runs.
Yeah.
And thankfully for him, got a no decision, because when he left, they were losing 2-1, and the joke was, if they had gotten that run in the start before, which was the 27 out of 28 guys out, he would have won that game, and he winds up getting 2 no decisions, giving up 2 runs in 2 games. And, you know, that's just what's expected. Now, there's a lot of pressure on him. He's under the microscope. He seems to handle it well. But, yeah, I think he's the real deal, not to the point, again, where he's going to be undefeated and go 20-4. But he has that. If you dropped him on a good offensive team, he could go 20-4 this year, in my opinion, because he'd be 8 or 9-0 already.
At this stage, yeah, it's unbelievable. He's already got that Steve Carlton 72 Phillies thing working on that team there.
Good analogy.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's reminding me of. The other guy here that I wanted to ask about, Matt Kemp, because you talk about the one home run thus far. Now, this is something, I'm going to go back to an argument that I made last year, urging people right about this time of the season in fantasy leagues to try to pick up Albert Pujols, try to buy low if possible. Tell me what you think about this theory. He's got one home run thus far this year. Now, in his case, I think the threshold for power, if we're purely looking power, would be lower than for Pujols. I said last year for Pujols, and I think I was about right on the money, what's the minimum number of home runs he was going to hit last year? 30. And at a certain point, he had like 3 or 4. I said, that means he's going to hit 26 or 27. Go get him.
And you were
so
right.
Yeah. Whatever it is for Kemp, what's the lowest? 22, 23, 24. Well, now you're going to have all of those except for one crammed into the last 120 games of the season. So do you put any credence in that, or do you think he may be the rare guy who manages to fall below whatever you thought the worst case scenario was.
I think the problem with Kemp, unlike Pujols, there were, my recollection is there were no injury problems with Pujols, and the old you play to your baseball card kind of thing, which I think average-wise Pujols is dipping all those years over 300 to 299 to 288 to 248 this year. I don't think he's hitting 248, but I don't think he's hitting 300. The wild card with Kemp is a shoulder. I would say to you, if you told me he was coming back from a wrist injury, based on what I've seen in the last 5 years, no. I'll go on record now as saying, much as I love Mark Teixeira as a Yankee guy, he's got a bad wrist, and when he comes back, I do not think he's going to get it back this year. The question for Kemp and how many home runs is, to me, more a question of health than a question of ability. And again, I saw an interview with him last week where he was very upfront, you know, no excuses, and give him credit, no excuses. But here's a guy who's a Triple Crown candidate, a legitimate Triple Crown candidate, everyone forgets recently.
Yeah.
And this year simply can't hit the ball far. Now, is his shoulder going to get stronger during the year? Yes. Is it going to get stronger enough for him to hit 20 home runs in the next 120 games? I don't think you can answer that because it's not a baseball card question to me, Rick. It's a health question to me.
Okay. That's an excellent distinction. So that explains our thoughts on what I have designated as the second tier. The first tier I have going 1 through 13. We'll start at number 13, and I believe the only guy on the list who's in the exact same spot I had him in a year ago, Craig Kimbrell, at 13. Not quite as dominant as he was a year ago, but again, I'm taking the whole thing into account at this point. For a guy who, in my estimation, was probably the best closer in baseball the last 2 years, Andrew McCutchen. At number 12, down slightly from number 10 a year ago. Not that he's really doing much worse, because a couple of these guys are pretty comparable here in these spots. Robinson Cano at number 11, up from 27. He has proved an awful lot this year, having to carry the Yankees to the large extent that he has. Prince Fielder at number 10, up from 18 a year ago. Mariano Rivera, ninth, not on the list a year ago for obvious reasons, but he is back, and he is looking as good as he ever has at this point. Felix Hernandez, eighth. He had dropped off it a year ago, and that just shows you, again, how much it can fluctuate with pitchers. Again, this is another guy who I think didn't miss it by much last year, but he did. Joey Votto in the seventh spot. He was fourth a year ago. Bryce Harper, sixth. Not on the list a year ago at all. We hadn't really seen enough from him to be able to judge anything at that point out of him. In the fifth spot, a guy who is often coupled in the same breath with Mike Trout, had him 30th on the list a year ago, and that's a guy where, again, much like Matt Harvey putting him on at 19th, there would be some people that might question whether or not you're jumping the gun on him a little bit, merely even putting him on the list, which is interesting that, that Steve, you had said just a minute ago that you actually had Harvey rated higher than what I had him here, so... for Trout to be on there 30th a year ago, some folks might have questioned that, but I think that more than bore out through the course of the season. He belonged on there. He's all the way up to 5th this year. Ryan Braun, 4th on the list. He was 6th a year ago. Justin Verlander, 3rd. I guess, yeah, as I look at this, he's the other guy who's in the exact same spot as a year ago, 3rd at that point. Number 2 on the list, Clayton Kershaw. He was 5th a year ago, and tops on the list this year, ranked number 1 on our top 30 FDH players for MLB. Miguel Cabrera, last year's American League Triple Crown winner, up from 11th at midseason last year when we were doing these rankings, or not exactly midseason, a little earlier than midseason. But Cabrera taking over the top spot here by dint of what he was able to get done. And again, the year in and year out on this. As you had mentioned in a previous segment, Steve, Mike Trout, down slightly in some categories from what he's done a year ago. With Cabrera, you have a little bit easier sense at this point in time, knowing what he's going to do from year to year. Trout is still establishing what his baseline's going to be. So again, 13 up to 1. It's Kimbrell, McCutchen, Cano, Fielder, Rivera, King, Felix, Votto, Harper, Trout, Braun, Verlander, Kershaw, and Cabrera. Take it away, Steve, on any agreements or disagreements.
Yeah, pretty comfortable with most of these. A few things in terms of top tier. Now, Verlander. But again, he's 4-4. His ERA is 3.17. His whip is 1.296. Very, very high for him. So maybe he goes to the second tier, but he could correct that with 2 Verlander starts. And that's... You almost have to differentiate, I think, Rick, there's early in the season between pitchers and hitters, because hitters have 40 games.
Yeah.
Pitchers have literally 8 or 9 starts. But, you know, if you had done this 8 days ago, Verlander would be right there. So Verlander's a question mark. But most of the other ones I'm pretty comfortable with. To me, it's more about who are the guys who maybe were in the second tier or not in any tiers, and we've already talked about the guys in the second tier. For me, like Harvey and Darvish, again, after 8 or 9 starts, they have to be in the top tier based on their performance, albeit in only 8 or 9 starts. Rivera, 16 for 16, unbelievable. This is the best start he's ever had as a Yankee, and mm-hmm. You know, he's only been a Yankee. King Felix is King Felix. You know, I think Trout is down a little. Would I drop him to the second tier? Well, again, it's 40 games. If he got dropped to the second tier, it would be, you know, number 14. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty comfortable with all these guys. Cano has been an MVP to me. He's an MVP candidate because every other top Yankee is hurt.
Yeah.
So he's in the mix. The guys I would add who I haven't seen on the list, and I have 3 to talk about briefly, but we did speak briefly in the other segment about Madison Bumgarner, mm-hmm. who is the ace this year so far of the Giants staff, 4-1 with a whip under 1, 2.18 ERA. There's at least one other game he could have won. I would put him into the top tier, maybe at 11, 12, 13, but I'd put him in the top tier. Another guy I think you have to put in based on performance this year, and you may not want to hear it, is the former Cleveland Indian, Chin-Soo Chu, because mm-hmm. he leads the major leagues in OBP, on-base percentage, .468.
Mm-hmm.
His OPS is 1.052, and I understand he's a defensive liability, but he's had some game-winning hits. He's batting .322. He's really made the conversion to the National League without a problem. I would put him in the top tier. I don't think I'd put him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, but he's in the mix to me. And the third guy, and I know he's a favorite of yours, but has really come into his own literally in the last couple of weeks, is Manny Machado.
Yeah.
The young Oriole third baseman. You talk about young players getting it done in the major leagues today. Machado leads the major leagues in hits, and I always love that stat because that means you're playing today. He's got, as of yesterday, 59 hits. And the only other guy in Major League Baseball with more than 53 is your triple crown winner, Cabrera.
Yeah.
So when you're in that kind of company on a topic like hits, to me, those are key topics. He's also hitting .343 if you're into that stuff. I know some people aren't into batting average. I happen to be a guy who believes to some degree in batting average, although I do agree, you know, OBP is more important.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a kid who's like 20, who's a very good defensive player, who leads the major leagues in hits and is hitting .340, I think he would be the third guy I would move into that top 13. If you asked me to take out 3 guys, I'd have a problem. I'd probably take out Verlander now, but when you do this in another 40 games, there's a good chance Verlander will go, you know, 6-0 in the next 40
sure.
games and be back in. That's the problem that I see with the pitchers versus the hitters. The pitchers really is a very small sample. If you did a top 30 after 10 games of hitters, you know, it wouldn't really be valid. Although I think, don't get me wrong, it's valid for pitchers because they're only going to get, even the best, they're only going to get 33, 34 starts.
No, that's true. And as far as it goes with hitters, again, and again, there's no reason that the top tier had to be 13 for all the players here. That was just the line as I saw it there. So, yeah, so it could be movable. In that regard, and as it goes with Trout, a guy who I've heard some other people say this, and not everybody necessarily agrees with this, but in my estimation, I think the greatest rookie season in baseball history last year. I mean, and not just a rookie of the year season. I mean, compare it to what Fred Lynn did in 75 when he also won the MVP. And I understand it's a different era, and home runs were a little bit harder to come by in the 70s. I get that, but even if you put the equalizers in there, Trout had about as good of a rookie season as anybody ever, although as we said, he's still working out the baseline. But as great as he was last year, as great as Bryce Harper has been this year, one of the things about Machado that's very convincing, I've seen this written and I can't remember exactly where at the moment, but that through his first, I think, 81 games in the major leagues, half a season, better numbers than what either Trout or Harper had at that point.
Yeah, I think I'd throw one more name into the mix, and I always go back to this guy because I think if you look at his history of statistics, and everyone knows he's an all-time great, but mm-hmm. you really have to divide his career into 2 segments, and that would be Joe DiMaggio, who in 1936, as a rookie coming over from the Pacific Coast League, the San Francisco Seals, where he had a big-time rep because he had that 61-game hitting streak in the Pacific Coast League, he went in his initial season and home runs hard to come by, 154-game season. He only played 138 games, 29 home runs, 125 RBIs, 44 doubles, 15 triples, led the league in triples, batted .323. This guy in 669 plate appearances, and this is what I like about a guy like DiMaggio, 669 plate appearances. He struck out 39 times.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
And,
okay.
And the reason I always go back to DiMaggio is because if you have any historians listening, and I'm sure you do, Rick,
yeah.
If you look at his pre-war years, they're the five most staggering first 5 years, in my view, in the history of baseball. And even though he was great, when he came back, he missed all of 43, all of 44, all of 45. Think about that. When he came back, he was still great, but he wasn't near as great as he was beforehand. And I'll just give you the batting averages. His first 6 years, 323, 346, 324. Then he won two batting titles in a row, 381, 352. In 1941, the year of the streak, he hit 357. And his first 5 years back after the war, 290, 315, 320, 346, 301. Not bad. In fact, very good. But nothing compared. He probably averaged, I can't do the math in my head, he probably averaged 30 to 35 points higher his first 5 years.
Yeah.
And with incredible power and RBI numbers.
Well, when you talk about, you know, that reminds me of another thing. When you talk about DiMaggio and what he did when he came up, because in the last year or so in my hometown, the greatest player that my Cleveland Indians ever had, Bob Feller, to talk about how he would have been Walter Johnson if you fill in those World War II years with the numbers that he had before and afterwards, and that he would have been among the all-time greats as opposed to merely a great pitcher. So the ripple effects of the very poor decision that the country of Germany made in electing a government in 1933, rippling across Major League Baseball here in the course of World War II and players that lost prime years, that's very interesting.
Well, I'll give you a few Feller numbers because I'm a big Feller fan now. I know he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way,
mm-hmm.
but here's a guy, and I think certainly in Cleveland people know the story. Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. Bob Feller enlists December 8th, 1941. You talk about a hero.
Yeah.
But I'll just give you his numbers, and it's DiMaggio-like. The 3 years, 39, 40, and 41. I was 17 and 11 as a rookie in 38. That's a great season. But 39, 40, 41, he's a young man. 24 and 9, 27 and 11, 25 and 13. Led the league in innings pitched all three seasons. Think about these numbers, Rick. 296, 320 innings, 343 innings. Led the league in strikeouts, 246, 261, 260 strikeouts, and then missed three full years. When he came back in 45, end of the war, he only pitched five games, so he really missed 4 years. So, yes, when he came back the years after, was he really good? Absolutely, but he was only Bob Feller, in my opinion, for one other year. He was 26 and 15. Then he was 20 and 11, 19 and 15, 15 and 14. He clearly was not the pitcher he was previously. So, yes, you could, and I wouldn't want to embarrass Feller or DiMaggio. You could call Feller the DiMaggio of pitchers. You can call DiMaggio the Feller of hitters.
Yeah.
But two of the greatest of all time. I think still, I know what you're saying. I think Feller's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Struck me a little as he got older, maybe a little bit bitter. I heard him speak a lot. I love listening to him talk because he was a no-guff guy. You knew where he stood on things. But think about these guys. Look at the superstars today. Suppose Mike Trout went into the Army the next 3 years.
Yeah. Well, and that would really take a chunk out of his numbers. And there's a thing about Trout I want to get back to in a second as it compares to DiMaggio and what you were talking about there. But as far as it goes with Feller, too, some of it is sort of, you know, the evolving, you know, moral ethos of our times, because I hear you on that kind of stuff. What I always think of when we get into a discussion like this is one of our fellow FDH Lounge dignitaries and members of the 21st Century Media Alliance, Russ Cohen, who does a lot of work on the memorabilia circuit and had been at some card shows where Bob Feller was at and happened to be in an elevator with Bob Feller and hear him dropping some N-bombs. So to Russ Cohen, that's how he defines Bob Feller. He's an old guy that I saw use the N-word on people. So it's really, you look at these prisms, and look, we've all got racist grandmothers and grandfathers. That it's regrettable, but everybody talked that way then.
Well, if I could say this about Feller, and I am no way defending anything that he said or did about that, but if you read the history of the Negro Leagues, and read the history of before 1947, you probably know this. Feller was one of the few white players who would go on the road and barnstorm and play against the Negro League players. Now, the person who thinks he's the racist would say it's just about green. He was just doing it for money. But whatever he was doing it for, he was one of not a lot of major leaguers back then who did go out and play against Satchel Paige and did go out and play against Josh Gibson. And he also is on record negatively to his credit, to his negative credit, as saying he didn't think the black guys could play in the major leagues. He also admitted later on, of course, as he had to, that he was 100% wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying he wasn't a racist. I think you're correct. Many people back then just did it as a matter of course.
Right.
Was that racist? Well, absolutely. Could you do it today? Of course you can. But Bob Feller has always been a very in and out of baseball, been a very fascinating guy.
Yeah.
And whatever you think of him and his politics and his beliefs, a national hero in my opinion forever, because he was the first guy. Bob Feller, not some rookie, not some journeyman. Bob Feller, the first Major League Baseball player to enlist the day after Pearl Harbor. And I think that gets him a ton of credit in my book.
Yeah, the heroism in World War II can't be negated. So he's one of these complicated people who's hard to put in a box. He is, again, I think first and foremost a hero for what he did in World War II. He's also the same bitter old guy that Russ Cohen heard dropping N-bombs on an elevator. So people can be very kind of complex. But what's interesting is when we started circling back to some historical figures to compare him to these guys, you mentioned Joe DiMaggio's rookie season and a very good analogy there if you're going to compare Mike Trout to anybody. But here's what I find kind of funny about that. When you talk about physical tools, who's the guy that Mike Trout gets compared to left and right? It's Mickey Mantle, the guy that came after DiMaggio. So very interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's a speed-related thing. Now, look, I'm a big speed guy. Speed kills. I know what it can do in baseball games. To me, the stolen base can be a valuable weapon. So if you ever, for example, if you wanted to take the Trout side on the DiMaggio rookie year argument, DiMaggio, I don't remember, he had very few stolen bases. He's a good base runner, but he had very few stolen bases. And even Mantle, the famous thing, and a lot of people thought this was boasting, but I think if you knew Mantle or had been, not that I was around him, but as a Yankee fan towards the end of his career, when the 40-40 thing with Jose Canseco came out, Mantle was quoted as saying, I had no idea it was going to be such a big deal to steal 40 bases. If I knew it was, I would have gone 50-50. And when you hear a Mantle say that, I think if you understand how great he was and how fast he was, but he also was decimated by injury to his knee his rookie year. He got hurt terribly. So Trout is a five-tool player. The guy I see offensively swinging that reminded me of Mantle in the last 5 years is Josh Hamilton, but only offensively swinging, not as a complete player, in terms of his actual swing. And you don't know where Trout's going. If he hits 280 this year, I don't think they're going to call him a flash in the pan. They're going to call him a very good major leaguer. And I don't think he's hitting 280. He's hitting 280 now.
Right.
But I think he's going to turn it around. I think they're all going to turn it around. Question for the Angels, of course, is to what degree they're going to turn it around. And that's going to base plus Jared Weaver coming back.
Yeah.
That's going to be their whole season. If Pujols hits 250 and Trout hits 280, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that I got four Angels on this list, as putrid as they've been collectively this year, shows you that I'm looking at overall body of work as well as what they've done coming into this year. Which, again, Chin-Soo Choo, another guy that you mentioned that I didn't have on the list. A guy who, again, I like a lot. He played for my favorite team for a number of years during a real down period for the team when there wasn't much to cheer for. A guy who I happen to have a bobblehead of at home. Strangely enough, not wearing a jersey. Picture this. He's wearing, like, a fashionable suit with a collarless shirt. Looking kind of flashy there. So, anyways, I like Chin-Soo Choo, but, again, in looking at what he had done the last couple of years, that was where he just kind of missed the list here. Manny Machado might have been the hardest one for me to have left off the list based on what you said, because it looks like he is becoming everything that his pedigree indicated. When you talk about pedigree, another guy that was hard for me to leave off the list that we haven't talked about thus far, Shelby Miller, because he's a guy, he's not on the same level of prospect of Matt Harvey, who, if he pans out, might be once in a generation. But Shelby looks like he's on that next tier of legitimate number one ace prospect, a guy coming through the system who they looked at him and said, this guy should be an ace, a Cy Young candidate for years to come if he stays healthy. And he's looking like that thus far this season. So
yeah, I think for him specifically, it's not just the one hitter. You obviously knew, and most baseball fans knew, or knowledgeable baseball fans knew about Shelby Miller, 5-2 with a 1.40 ERA. So it wasn't just, his one hitter. His whip is 0.877. So you're talking numbers, guys don't go whole seasons with whips like Harvey at 0.7.
Right.
And 0.08. These are like video game numbers. So we'll see if that plays out. But the point is, yes, they're two fantastic young pitchers.
One last name I'm going to ask you about here, because this is a guy, the fact that you haven't mentioned him, maybe you're in agreement with me on this, a guy who a lot of people would expect to be on a top 30 list that I didn't have on there, and again, I didn't have a hard time leaving him off when because I'd have guys like Machado ahead of him. Starlin Castro is a guy that a lot of people would already expect to be on a list like this. And my whole thing has just kind of been like, you know what? He looks like he's getting to that point at some point. Talk to me in another year or two. That's kind of what I think when I see that guy. I want to see what his power tops out at. I want to see if he's going to become one of these guys that really does become, hands down, one of the best shortstops in baseball, as opposed to, oh, this guy has a chance to make the All-Star game this year.
Yeah, I agree with that analysis. I must say I haven't seen him play a lot. But certainly whenever you see him, the rare times you see him on national TV, I think he's the guy with the future. I would put Machado on the list before him if that was the that was the choice. There'd be, you know, no doubt in my mind what I would do. But, you know, he's only been around for a few years. I think he has a bright future. I think, frankly, and this may be sad to say, but he's on the wrong team. And you don't say, oh, he's playing in Chicago, because he's playing in Chicago. But you do say he's on the wrong team, because the Cubs are still, you know, I don't know what Theo Epstein's doing. I think he's a very good GM and turn things around. But, you know, they're going nowhere this year as well. So you don't really get, you know, he's hitting 282 this year. He did hit 323 last year, so you do give him credit. But I don't think, well, I apologize, he hit 283. His OBP was 323. He's a very good young player. If you wanted to put a guy in the top, in your top 30, and it was between Machado and Castro, I'd pick Machado for sure. But that doesn't mean Castro won't be there in another year and maybe in another 40 or 80 games. You just don't know. I just think playing on that team, he's not going to have a lot of protection. And he is a very, very good player. And by the way, played every game last year, which to me in the modern era, pretty played 158 the year before. That's pretty impressive. Years ago, it was not a big deal.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. And your ability to go out there every day, Cal Ripken speak aside, because that got to be, in my view, almost a joke at the end. Your ability to play every day in any sport, baseball, basketball, football, hockey, is a valuable commodity today that 30 years ago was just looked upon as you should be playing every day.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and again, we're not slamming them. It's just like, okay, come back to us another year or so, young fella, and we'll see what you're doing at that point. But Steve, as I knew it would be, a pleasure breaking it down with you. Thank you so much for joining us to do this here today.
Had a great time, Rick. Can't wait to do it again.
Thank you.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.